Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Invasive snake populations in the Everglades continue to have a devastating impact on the ecosystem. Burmese pythons, North African pythons, and boa constrictors have dramatically reduced the fur-bearing population in the Everglades. Since 2007, Zoo Miami has been working with the National Park Service, the United States Geological Service, and the University of Florida to eradicate these invasive species. In recent years, they've incorporated new techniques like implementing tracking devices in captured pythons and then letting them back out in the wild. Well, joining us now is WLRN's environment reporter, Jenny Stiletovich. Jenny, always great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Frank Ridgely, a wildlife veterinarian who serves as the head of the Conservation and Research Department at Zoo Miami. Frank, great to have you.
Hi, Lois. Thanks.
Frank, let me start with you. The zoo's been involved, engaged in this invasive species removal program for a decade now. Is it working?
I think it depends on what aspect you're looking at. And we've been a partner with all these other organizations trying to better understand what these invasive snakes are doing in the habitats. First, we have to understand what they're doing before we can come up with solutions. And we're trying to find techniques where we can detect them better because they're incredibly hard. But I would say for like the Burmese python, we're far past the stage of potential eradication. You know, these are efforts more to control.
There will never be eradication.
Well, there's nothing on the horizon that we are aware of that's a good potential. But for the Burmese python, we're looking at how do we control it? How do we manage it? How do we limit its spread?
You know, Jenny, the other thing I was thinking is, you know, we have all of this effort statewide to try to get rid of this invasive species. And I know that they recently caught the 500th python, I think it was. But nobody's ever answered the question, how many are there? We don't know.
That's right, because they're so hard to find. That's right, because they're so hard to find, getting an estimate on the sheer number is difficult. I believe they've tried to model it out. Frank might have a better guess than me, but they've, through some of this tracking effort, they don't know. And I think it was like 2,000 pythons, which is just a blip. It's more.
So how do we know if we're succeeding? I guess, Frank just told us. I think we're at the point where there's no eradication.
Right. And the way they sort of measure the impact of pythons is what's missing from the marshes. You know, so that's how they know how far they've spread in addition to the sightings. But the python elimination and the hunting is really to draw attention. I think they've been very successful at drawing attention to it. But I think they recognize that as far as actually getting rid of the snakes, hunting them down is not the way to go.
And every single one that's removed, I mean, that does have a local impact.
That's true.
Through the life of, you know, you remove a couple hundred pythons a year, you're in the lifetime of those snakes, you're saving thousands of animals that would have been consumed.
But the other thing, too, is this, is for every one you remove, how many are replacing that one?
Yeah, that's a big question. And that's something the scientists have really struggled to try to answer for the public and for policymakers. They want to know how many are there. And they're so incredibly difficult to find in the wild that to get an accurate population numbers,
this is why there's this effort to track them. Mm-hmm. And so talk about some of the tactics here, because one of them was just putting like a sensor on it so we know where it's going and what it's doing, right?
Yeah. So some of the biologists that have worked on this problem over the years in the Park Service and for University of Florida and USGS, one way to understand the snakes better, at first they wanted to put transmitters in the snakes. They do it surgically because snakes don't have necks and they don't have any way to keep anything on them externally. So you put this transmitter in a snake and then let it go to find out, okay, do they keep a home range? Are they just wanderingly aimlessly across the Everglades? Where can we find them? Do they concentrate in a certain spot where maybe we could find them easier in a certain location?
So is it difficult to put this transmitter into the snake again? Because as you said, it's not like when you're tagging a shark, you're just putting a transmitter, a small device, on the fin. You have to surgically insert it into the snake. Is that difficult so you're not hurting the snake and altering the snake's behaviors and
right.
so forth?
That's kind of Zoo Miami's role. We've been a supporting role in that, in offering to do the surgeries, because we have this really wonderful veterinary staff at Zoo Miami that are experts on wildlife. So we'll do these surgeries for these biologists as part of our partnership to make sure they're done properly, because these are behavioral studies.
Right.
If you do the surgery wrong, it's going to affect the behavior, and we want to know what they're doing naturally.
Do we know how many snakes have been tagged this way?
I was trying to come up with a total number through the years, and I really don't know. I think we're probably close to 50 that we've done through the years.
What is the tagging you've done so far? What has it told you? What do we know?
So, yeah, it's given all kinds of information. We learned about how these snakes, during the breeding season, they conglomerate into what we call breeding balls, where there'll be one female and multiple males. And we've discovered what is the breeding season in Florida. And if we can track a snake during that time, we might actually be able to remove multiple snakes at the same time.
When is the breeding season for snakes?
It's usually in the fall is when this is occurring in some of these big constrictors. And so if we have a snake with a transmitter, a male, he might lead us to a female and multiple other males, and they can remove them all at once. And they don't. It's much more efficient than trying to walk across the Everglades and looking for this very cryptic species. So that's one technique we learned. We learned maybe they keep home ranges and how big those home ranges are. We tried to find out if they prefer certain things. So like the tree islands in Everglades National Park, are they in those just as much as they're in the sawgrass prairies? And now they're moving into Big Cypress National Park, and that's a whole different ecosystem. We've got prairies, we've got cypress domes, and we have the Florida panther there. So we're trying to figure out impacts on these big snakes, you know, to either the food or to the panther itself.
You know, Jenny, it seems like so many of the stories that I always keep running into, it's about the eradication. I this is new to me. It's like this idea of just tracking them and trying to figure out what their behavior is. Do we know a lot? I mean, have we gathered a lot of information on that?
I mean, I think they are gathering more and more information. Frank mentioned, for instance, do the snakes gather around wading bird islands? There was new research on that, I think it was last year, that found, in fact, they were starting to congregate around wading bird islands. And the thought was that maybe since they've eaten all the small mammals, they've turned their attention to wading birds now. I think some of this information, too, I know I said that hunting and the elimination just barely makes a dent in the population, but the more kind of behavioral studies that Frank and other scientists do can inform hunters, you know, so then they'll know. I think they were trying to model, like, you know, what's the right temperature when they're out and what time of day. If they can figure out, we know they come out to bask and warm up at a certain time of day when the temperature is this, then they can help hunters better find those snakes.
Frank, how has it changed the approach when it comes to coordinating volunteers, you know, hunters, volunteers, whether it's setting up traps, catching them, or tagging them? I mean, is everybody working together on this?
Yeah, there's multiple agencies, and actually it's been one of the most now cohesive programs between all the different agencies. The Park Service has been very fierce in making sure they regulate the activity in the national parks and not wanting at first for people to be going in these areas. And now they realize they need help. And they need help to eyes and ears out there, skilled people, trained people, to go out into these parks and help protect these natural resources. So they've
They just expand and add Biscayne National Park this past year? So
yeah,
early on they were a little hesitant because there's no hunting allowed in national parks, but I think they realized that that this was different, that elimination is not the same as...
Yeah, and same with lionfish, right? Lionfish are the same thing. They've opened that up and they're asking people to come in, please help eliminate lionfish out of the local areas. And I think that's good for locals also to take some responsibility with protecting the national resources. They feel like they're making a difference. They're out there trying to make a difference, and they are removing some of these big snakes.
Just be careful when you go out and do it. If you're not sure what you're doing, please don't go out and try to catch
Everyone gets trained and certified before going out.
Frank Ridgely, again, is a wildlife veterinarian and serves as the head of the Conservation and Research Department at Zoo Miami. We're also talking with Jenny Stiletovich, environmental reporter for WLRN. Again, looking at these different programs in place right now to track and eradicate the invasive species in the Everglades, which again include the North African pythons, the Burmese pythons, and the boa constrictors. Something else too, Frank, that, and Jenny brought this up to us, and this is how I learned about it, was this other project now dealing with pheromones. All right, so help me understand how this works. And this is in understanding, again, tracking the snake, but maybe even luring it.
Yeah, this has been talked about in the scientific community for years, because once we discovered that, you know, they form these breeding aggregates at that time of year, we know there has to be some very powerful attractant. And it turns out that the female snake, when she's receptive and she sheds her skin, she lets off this powerful pheromone, this chemical attractant that the males find irresistible and will come and find her, and then the males compete for breeding. So we always thought if we could figure out what that chemical compound is and we could use it and make the snakes come to us instead of us trying to find them in this incredibly difficult habitat, that would be a pretty good tool at helping us remove a lot of snakes at once. So they haven't been able to synthetically produce this pheromone or isolate it yet. But then there's this researcher named Rocky Parker who wrote one of the best titles of a scientific paper I've ever heard. It was called How to Make a Sexy Snake. And it's a very serious scientific paper, and his research is serious, but it was a great title. And he did this with garter snakes, where he used a hormone to manipulate one of the snakes to produce this pheromone, and it was very powerful. Now, we're trying to figure out, the researchers at USGS and National Park Service are trying to figure out, can we make this happen in Burmese pythons? They're very different snakes, a garter snake and a Burmese python. They split off a long time ago in the evolutionary tree, but if we could make that happen, maybe that's another tool in the arsenal, right? Of maybe we have a transmitter snake that's also producing these pheromones, so it's just going through the Everglades collecting other snakes. It makes it more efficient. Anything we can do to make it more efficient is a great tool.
Well, and we were at the same meeting, I think it was last week, when USGS presented some early findings, and mm-hmm. where they put the pheromone in a surgically implanted tracker, right? And then they did these, maybe you can describe this test a little bit better than I can, but the males with the pheromone tracker drew other male snakes just as much as females?
That's what, they're in the middle of a pilot study. And so, yeah, I do the surgeries for them. And so we implant a tracker and we implant these hormone implants, and some of them have hormones, some of them don't. So it's a real true like blind study, and then they're doing behavioral trials to see if it seems like it works. And so that was some of the preliminary, but they feel like they still need to find out, you know, maybe exact doses and how it works, but it looks somewhat promising.
You know, it's what I love about science. You just said it, sexy snakes. That's yeah. how you do it. You know, Jenny, we always talk about the python, but you know, something that I had a friend in college who did have a boa constrictor when it was small, and you know, it's just like, I don't know what he did with it. Now I'm feeling bad because he may have been one of those people who just let it out. But we don't talk about boa constrictors that much. And Frank, I want to hear from you as well. I mean, is this as big a problem as the python?
I'm going to let Frank take over this, because okay. I think my thought is that they haven't had as big an impact on natural areas. That's yeah. where all our resources and concerns usually go, into protected areas, and the boas have not quite had the same impact, right?
They're very localized. So the Burmese python got into Everglades National Park.
You know what? First, real quickly, yeah. the difference. Describe the difference.
So Burmese pythons are what an old world species, we call it. So, and they're a little different. They're egg-laying large constrictor snakes. Boa constrictors are from Central and South America, and they're live-bearing snakes, or what we call ovoviviparous. And so that it just looks like they give birth to live young. But they are also a very large constrictor, similar to boa, and in the same family as pythons. So that's the difference between them. Now, Burmese pythons and North African pythons were kind of on the edge of kind of the eastern Everglades, and now we're moved in. The North African pythons seem to be fairly isolated and contained. But they get all the big press, of course, because they're having huge impacts now that their population exploded. Boa constrictors are on the east coast of Miami-Dade County in some very important ecosystems like the pine rockland and the hardwood hammocks and the mangroves around there. But because they can't really go north into the urban setting or west into the neighborhoods, they've been confined to these coastal ecosystems, probably having big impacts for those preserves locally, and eating probably anything they can catch. But if they continue to move south, they've been established, we think, since the 1970s. If they continue to reproduce and move south, they will reach that point where they will turn the corner down by Homestead, and they could be the next big constrictor in the middle of the Everglades.
So are there efforts like to get rid of those as we do with the pythons?
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Zoo Miami launched a study a few years ago, starting in like 2012, and we did the same thing. We put trackers in. We wanted to understand how these snakes are using that habitat. There was a actually some citizens who became aware, and there was a complaint, and so we said, we're part of Miami-Dade County, let's do something. And so we took the initiative. There was only one other study of boa constrictors, and it was in Puerto Rico, and they were also invasive there. And that study found they were all up in the tops of trees, so no one could find them. And then we did a study, and we got surprised. We found out that they were mostly underground here. And so that was a big revelation for us, because whenever anyone tries to go look for them, they can't find them. And it's probably because they're all underground in these solution holes and gopher tortoise burrows.
I am feeling really bad because my friend had one in college, and we thought it was the coolest thing in the world. You know, we talked about these volunteers, and, you know, we think about one of them, for example, is this guy, Dusty Crum, and he's got his own TV show, you know. And I'm wondering, how important are these volunteers in addressing the problem?
I think keeping awareness is a huge part of it, too. Just like right now, you're saying you feel bad when you were younger.
First of all, it wasn't my snake, so I don't feel that bad. Okay.
I know, but we want people to think about that. When you go to purchase an animal like this, or if the animal gets out of control in size and management for you, you know, the last thing you should do is let them go. FWC has an amnesty program. They will accept any non-domestic exotic animal. You can surrender it, no questions asked. Just call them up and they will take it, even if you don't have the proper permits for it. Surrender it to FWC. Never let this stuff go in the wild, because it literally costs billions of dollars every year to fight invasives. And Miami-Dade County spends, I think, over like $3 million, you know, a year just combating this problem. And Florida is unique in it, that we say everything likes to live in Florida. but it's for the invasive species, it's true.
I want to finish with this. I'm going to come back to what you said, Frank, in that I guess we have to accept that maybe there won't be any eradication. We have to try to control this, but there won't be eradication. Jenny, let me start with you, though. What does the state say? What do state officials, different people you've talked to, say about how they rate success then? How are they going to rate success in this issue if we can't eradicate it?
I think managing them, keeping them from spreading, and trying to undo some of the damage. I mean, if we can manage them and bring down their numbers and restore some of the habitat that they've wiped out, you know, and the ecosystem that they've done so much harm to.
How do they say manage when we don't know how many there are?
Well, again, it'll be the what they call the indicator species. So if they can contain, trap, eliminate more of the snakes, and they see marsh rabbits, raccoons, small mammals coming back to the Everglades, then I think they'll say, okay, that's a sign of success.
Yeah.
And we're just there again, as Frank has said, these snakes are so hard to find. It seems like that's the stage we're still at, and all this this research into modeling their behavior, coming up with tracking devices, figuring out where they live, their habitat, how they breed, is really the forward edge of how they're going to contain them. The hunters get the attention, and that's a great thing for raising awareness and getting people involved and letting people think they're doing something to deal with the problem. But it's really all that research effort that's going to make the big difference.
Frank, real quickly, how are you going to rate success?
Jenny was right on. I think it's getting recovery of species. You can have localized effects if you're intense, like they're doing a lot in the southwest part of Florida and some local habitats that are important, and they're removing these snakes, and it's probably having a big effect on those species to be able to recover. But I think overall it's difficult. For some species like the North African python, there is a chance of eliminating that. It's on the lower part of what we call an invasion curve. At the bottom, you have a chance of getting rid of them early on, and that's why it's so important for people to not release exotic animals and also report them if they see something unusual. But once you get on this curve and you get way up into kind of where they just exponentially explode, then you move into management. And barring like a super cold winter, or maybe some new biological technique where maybe it's a custom virus in the future that only targets Burmese pythons, you know, we're limited on what we can come up with right now.
Custom virus, sexy snake. At some point, science may figure out how to handle this. Yeah. Frank Ridgely, again, wildlife veterinarian who serves as head of the Conservation and Research Department at Zoo Miami. Frank, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Jenny Stiletovich, our environment reporter here at WLRN. Jenny, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, still to come, an exhibit in Key Largo that will give you a picture of life in Key Largo back in the 1930s. Really different life. We're coming up next on Sundial.
Just an empty fire. Another man on a wire. Just an empty fire.